The following show about the assassination of John F. Kennedy was recorded on location at the Sixth Floor Museum at Dealey Plaza, Dallas, Texas, back in 1998, 9 years after the National Historical Landmark opened in 1989. As time has marched on, the following show remains as a timeless recollection of a most infamous day in American history. I'm Tom Wilmer.
We stand today on the edge of a new frontier. The frontier of the 1960s, the frontier of unknown opportunities and perils, the frontier of unfilled hopes and unfilled threats.
November 22nd, 1963, the day that President John F. Kennedy was gunned down as his motorcade approached the Dealey Plaza underpass in downtown Dallas, Texas. I was in my 8th grade science class when the news was announced over the school's PA system. Everyone was incredulous. Girls started to cry, and the boys stoically put their heads in their hands and slumped at their desks. By that evening, as we sat in our dens and living rooms, glued to our TV sets, watching Walter Cronkite relate and interpret the soul-numbing chain of events, we came to accept, with heartbreaking regret, that our president was dead.
I want historians 10 years from now to say, these were the years when the tide ran out for the United States. I want them to say, these were the years when the tide came in. These were the years when the United States started to move again.
I have a dream today.
To halt this offensive buildup, a strict quarantine on all offensive military equipment under shipment to Cuba is being initiated.
Here is the presidential jet. The loading ladders are being wheeled into place. This is a split-second timed operation for the Secret Service and the Air Force and the Signal Corps. Nothing left to chance. Every possible precaution has been taken.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route.
Looks like the plane has been hit. Air Cuba, stand by.
General Parker has been notified.
Hospital has been advised to stand by for a severe gunshot wound.
We're here at the trademark. I can see many, many motorcycles coming by now. Something has happened here. We understand there has been a shooting. The presidential car coming up now. We know it's the presidential car. You can see Mrs. Kennedy. There's a Secret Service man, spread eagle, over the top of the car. We understand Governor and Mrs. Connolly are in the car with President and Mrs. Kennedy. We can't see who has been hit, if anybody's been hit, but apparently something is wrong here. Something is terribly wrong.
John F. Kennedy died at approximately 1 o'clock Central Standard Time today here in Dallas. He died of a gunshot wound in the brain.
Hearing without legal representation or anything. I didn't shoot anybody, no, sir.
Now the prisoner wearing a black sweater, he has changed from his t-shirt, is being moved out toward an armored car. Being let out by Captain Fritz. There is the prisoner. Do you have anything to say in your defense? There's a shot. Oswald has been shot.
Ask not
what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Media relations liaison Bob Porter works at the 6th floor Book Depository Museum in downtown Dallas, Texas. Porter was an entertainment reporter for the Dallas Times-Herald. November 22, 1963 is a day he will never forget. Over the years, Porter has interviewed more than 120 people who were intimately intertwined with the tragic events of that infamous day in our history.
I'd gone to work just a few months prior to that for the Dallas Times-Herald, which was the afternoon daily newspaper. There were two major newspapers in the city at that time, the Dallas Morning News, which is still here, the morning paper, Times-Herald, which was the afternoon newspaper. I was a theater and movie critic primarily, which meant that I wasn't really assigned to the presidential visit on November 22, 1963. In fact, our department was very busy at that time because we had a 2 p.m. deadline that day to get all our material in for our Sunday amusement sections, as we called it in those days. Of course, when something happened in the motorcade, word came into, there was kind of a skeleton crew at the newspaper. All the guys and some women who were in the city desk at that time were out covering the story, following the president around town for parade. There was a big luncheon schedule for him at the Trademark. 1,500 people were waiting for him to get there. It was quite a big day in the city. And then when word came in that something had happened in the motorcade, of course, everybody got thrown into the story.
How did you hear? Did somebody run into the newsroom, or was it a phone call? What happened?
Well, someone who was with the motorcade called back to the city desk, which was in another part of the building from where we were. Someone from that area came over to tell us something had happened. And, of course, you know, everybody was stunned and sort of frozen there. But we were the afternoon newspaper. Assassination was at 12:30. Our big edition, some of it was already done because we had copies of Kennedy's speech he was going to deliver. On the front page of a big story about what he was saying in that speech and so forth. Of course, all that was thrown out, and we started from scratch covering the developments there. The first flash was that there were shots fired. Learned that both President Kennedy and Governor Connally were hit. Then learned that the president was dead. Learned that Officer Tippett had been shot out near downtown. Learned that a suspect named Lee Harvey Oswald had been arrested. So all these things were happening all this time period. It was pretty active. In my department, what we were doing was checking around to see, get reactions. I recall, let's say, Joan Crawford was in town, the actress that day. Mm-hmm. I got her on the telephone, asking her reaction. She, of course, was stunned, shocked, as everyone was. Also, I was checking around to see what, it was a big weekend. There were opera performances, there were symphony performances, theaters. Basically, what I was doing was checking those venues and see what they were going to be doing. And somewhere along that process, a light on my phone blinked, and I picked it up. And it was Jack Ruby returning a call to our nightclub columnist. I looked over at Don Safran, who was our nightclub columnist, and he was on the telephone. So I relayed that information to Jack Ruby. And Jack asked me if I knew what he was calling about, and I explained what we were doing. And Jack said, well, what are the nightclub people doing? And I said, well, I'd only heard about a couple of them, and they said they were going to close for the weekend. And Jack said, but they're going to close, are they? And I said, well, that's what I understand. He says, well, what do you think I should do? And I said, well, Jack, I don't know. It's your club. So there was a pause, and he said, well, maybe I better close too. I said, okay, you're going to close. Okay, let me put you down for that. And he said, yeah, sounding very indifferent about the whole thing at that particular point in time. Jack Ruby, he hung around the newspaper as he hung around the police station, as he hung around the TV and radio. He was just a kind of a groupie, kind of a character who wanted to be where the action was. No one had any security in those days. Anybody could walk into the front door of our building, get on the elevator, come up to the newsroom, walk over to your desk, as he frequently did. And he would be usually trying to get us to run some pictures of his strippers, entertainers, which we wouldn't do, and we'd chase him off. You know, everybody just considered him kind of a little sleazeball kind of a character. And of course, it was a great shock Sunday morning, initially, when he shot Oswald. In retrospect, and on an emotional level, it made more sense. He was a psychologically unstable person. There's a lot of areas of speculation about his motivations for doing that. I never talked to him again after that.
You have interviewed over the years in excess of 130 people that were intimately involved in this circumstances. Is that correct?
Well, one of the reasons I'm sure they hired me at the museum here was because I'd done the personality interviews for the newspaper over the years and had a lot, developed hopefully some expertise in that. The oral history project we have here at the museum, and the museum examines the life, times, death, and legacy of President John F. Kennedy, mm-hmm. not just the assassination. And so it's a gathering of information from people who were part of the events, but also kind of a social history project in the sense that we particularly talked to some of the community leaders who maybe not have been directly involved with this, and then also talk about the period after. If you recall, people old enough recall at Dallas, the stigma fell on Dallas because the assassination mm-hmm. happened here, and how the city, we talked to these people about how the city reacted, how did the healing process come about. You know, it's really kind of a broader,
bigger picture.
Kind of a project.
Well, speaking of that, how is Dallas today collectively dealing with that guilt and that burden that has been put on them by the rest of the country?
Of course, there are still people here who took a long time for something to happen at this site, and from one point of view, from a strictly historical point of view, rather quickly something was done here, which is the creation of the museum that's here today. It opened in 1989.
This is a National Historic Site?
Yes, mm-hmm. and it was so designated in 1993 by the National Park Service to protect this area. People came to Dealey Plaza every day after the assassination, so that created a motivation eventually for the community to address. I mean, there are a lot of people who were not unhappy, you know. There were people you would ask, say, in that time period, what should happen here? And they would say, oh, let's just tear that building down. But others who realized that, no, you can't really do that. Like it or not, you're the caretakers of a significant historic site. And so you have to deal with that.
I need to ask the question, and that is the old conspiracy theories. What is your gut feeling?
Well, I can't take any personal point of view because the museum itself doesn't take any personal point of view. It's rather interesting that after people come here, we have 400 historic photographs, 6 different video and theater screens that provide information. People come through here at the end. We have what we call memory books where people are invited to write their thoughts. It's one of the interesting aspects of that is that some people will write in there after having toured the museum. I've decided that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone gunman, and maybe on the next page somebody might write, well, after having seen this museum, I now believe it had to be a conspiracy. So we think that's good in the sense that we are providing information for people and they're making their own personal judgments, making up their own minds about what happened here.
Before we go, give us a real quick word picture of what somebody sees here.
It begins with a little background about the 1960s when what was going on in the popular culture when John Kennedy was running for office. This is particularly important for about half of our population now was not even born when this happened. And we get a lot of young people, a lot of family groups here. It's very educational in that sense. And it's background about Kennedy in office so people can see what he sounded like, what he was saying. The trip to Texas, the background about that. The assassination sequence, what happened there. The investigation periods, there have been 4 major governmental investigations, a lot of information about that, what evidence exists, ending with, and then some information about some of the conspiracy theories that are out there, and ending with a legacy section, which we have a film in which Walter Cronkite, who you see in the videos kind of through the museum, anybody old enough to remember Walter Cronkite announcing the president's death, that really hits when they see this again.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he hosts this film at the Legacy, which kind of brings us up to date on Kennedy's programs, the significance of that event to broadcast journalism.
Bob, we're out of time. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Bob Porter, the Director of Public Programs at the 6th Floor Museum in downtown Dallas, Texas.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.